Well, last week we began a series called Check Your Heart, and we began that series talking about how that there's a ton of different types of tests designed to evaluate and monitor the physical condition of our hearts, like EKG, stress tests, angiograms, MRIs, CT scans. The question we're wrestling with in this series is, what about the emotional or spiritual condition of your heart? When it comes to what's going on the inside, not on the physical condition, but in terms of how we're doing emotionally and mentally and spiritually, what are the tests? Like, there seems to be a void. What are the tests that we use to monitor the emotional or spiritual condition of our heart? And the reason that's so important is because the scriptures tell us that above all else, we're to guard our heart. For everything you do flows from it, is what Solomon said. The idea is that what's in your heart spills over, and it spills out into your thoughts, into your beliefs, into your actions, into your words, as we saw last week. And it impacts, it has the potential to impact your relational health and your professional health and your personal health, your family and your network of relationships and your marriage. And last week, we talked about the first of our heart monitors. The first of our heart monitors was this, was that what you say flows from what's in your heart. And this was a teaching of Jesus where he said, basically, you store things in your heart. And if you monitor the words that are coming out of your mouth, they're indicative. Or they're an indication of what you're storing in your heart. It turns out you can store two different types of things in your heart. You can store good things or you can store bad things in your heart. And those things have a way of making their way out of you. Today, we're going to talk about a second heart monitor. And I want to give a disclaimer or slash a warning up front. Today, our heart monitor has to do with money. Now, I know some of you are thinking, oh no, like this was the day I brought my friend. They're here for the first time. And so I just want to acknowledge up front, I get it. Like when it comes to church, you know, there's this stigma related to money and talking about money in church. But this is a series about your heart. And I know where this comes from because it seems like pastors and preachers are notorious for doing and saying all sorts of things to get people to give money to the church. If you've been around here for any length of time, you know we don't do that on a regular basis. But it does remind me of a story of a pastor who years ago was their church was in a difficult spot, in a difficult financial spot, and they were trying to get people to give money to their church. And so he started the service. He stood up and said, hey, here's what's going to happen. We have a special vocalist who's going to sing a song, and we're going to start today with the offering. Very first thing we're going to do, we're going to pass the offering, which you notice we didn't even pass an offering or pass a bucket today. But he stood up and he said, hey, we're going to pass the offering. And here's why we really need help. Like we've got some things going on and we've run into some difficult times and we really need to give some money. And so here's what I want to do. I want to incentivize. So think about this. I want to incentivize your giving. The person that gives the most amount of money, I'm going to give them the chance to select three hymns. So, you know, in the service. And so the vocalist comes up, sings the song, they pass the plate. And at the end of the offering, the pastor sees that there's a huge check. Somebody wrote a huge check. And so just kind of overcoming the moment, which I'm not sure this was a good idea, but overcoming the moment, he said, hey, I just want to acknowledge somebody has written a really large check and it's significant. It's really going to help us out with our problems. I would love to just acknowledge and thank the person that did this. Would you be willing to raise your hand? And all the way in the back row, there was an older lady who sheepishly raised her hand, and she kind of indicated that it was her. And the pastor, he said, come here, I want you to come down front. So he calls her down in front of the entire church, and he said, hey, I just want to say thank you so much for your generosity and for that large gift. He didn't tell people how much it was, but I want to give you the opportunity to choose three hymns. And she looked at him like, right now? And he's like, yeah, right now. And so she looked out at the congregation. She saw three handsome men, and she said, I'll take him, and I'll take him, and I'll take him. That one kind of backfired on him a little bit, but he still got the large donation. I promise there won't be any of that today, and you don't get to pick out any hymns. As it turns out, our physical health has... that's a terrible joke, by the way. That's what you'd expect from a preacher. It has a common adversary. Our physical health has a common adversary with our emotional or our mental or our spiritual health, and that's our appetites. Now, I don't have to say a lot about this because you know. We have appetites for all sorts of things. When it comes to our physical health, Some of us have bigger appetites than others. Some of us have appetites, I'm pointing at myself, for things that are not good for us more than others. And it affects the physical condition of our heart. But the same thing's true when it comes to the spiritual or emotional condition of our heart. When it comes to our physical condition, it's not the fact that, the problem isn't the foods that are available to us. It's our appetite. And it's the lack of discipline when it comes to our appetite. And the reason is because in the language of appetites, there's only one word. There's only one single word, and the word is more. When it comes to appetites, appetites are never fully or finally satisfied. You know this because you get a taste of something, and it typically what happens is when you taste something that you like or you get a taste of something, your appetite actually grows. And when you find things that you think are going to satisfy your desires, you not only want it, you want more of it. And when we become convinced that there's something that's going to satisfy something, some desire that's inside of us, a relational desire, an experiential desire, a professional desire, what happens is we get fixated on it. And this is what I want to talk about. Our heart gets set on it. And we set our hearts on certain things, and we don't just want it. We feel like we need it, and we feel like we need it now. And so some of you know this. You've learned this by experience like me. But as a pastor, here's one of the things I've discovered. When it comes to satisfying desires in life, you know, this is something nobody's immune to. We all have desires. And when it comes to satisfying our desires, I've discovered that there's a specific curve when it comes to satisfying desires. How we satisfy our desires and when we satisfy our desires have a relationship between them. And the truth is some of us have experienced significant personal problems. Sorry, I wrote the wrong word. It's hard to say one word and write a different one. When we experience significant personal problems, when we try to satisfy desires that we have now, satisfy a desire now that maybe we weren't intended to meet until later versus later, now versus later. And the curve looks like this, that when we try to satisfy desires now through succumbing to instant gratification, some of you have experienced this, the amount of personal problems I see by people who hastily try to get their needs met now without considering later, is disproportionate. And most of us have experienced significant problems, maybe even avoidable pain in your life or pain for other people in your life by acting now with little regard for later, which is like the definition of instant gratification. Instant gratification is being consumed with now. This is my definition. It's not in Webster. Being consumed with now, having little regard for later. And this is dangerous for us. It's dangerous physically. It's dangerous relationally. And to the point of today, it's dangerous financially. Jesus talked a lot about money. If you're wondering how much Jesus talked about money, he talked about money more than just about anything else. He talked about getting our needs met in terms of money and wealth and possessions. There's over 2,300 references in the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are the three accounts of Jesus' life. In the Gospels, there's over 2,300 references to wealth and finances and possessions. And nearly half of Jesus' 38 parables have to do with money. So here's the question. Why was Jesus so concerned about money, especially if you're a Jesus follower? And this is just an honest question. Why is Jesus so concerned about money if he's God? It's not like he needs your money. Like, if God needs your money, he's not God. And God doesn't need your money. He doesn't necessarily even want your money. But he was really concerned with talking about money and what we do with our money. So, if you have a Bible, Matthew chapter 6. It's the first of the four accounts of Jesus' life, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Matthew chapter 6, he talks specifically in one of his most famous sermons, specifically about money connected to the heart. This is what he said. He said, don't store up treasures here on earth, and you may have heard this before, where moths eat them and rust destroys them and where thieves break in and steal. His point is basically, look, if you invest in temporal things, you're only going to enjoy them in a temporal way, just for now. They're not going to last. You're going to invest in something that's not a good investment. He said, instead, store up your treasures in heaven where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. And last week, we talked about the fact that there's two types of things you can store in your heart. Today, Jesus is making the point that there's two places we can store up our treasures. There's two places we can store our money and our wealth and our possessions. And we can either store them now, here in this age. We can store them now here on earth, which if you were here, we did a series on heaven not long ago. And we talked about the fact that there's this age and then there's the age to come. And Jesus said, look, you can there's two places you can store your treasures or you can store your wealth. You can either store them here on earth or you can store them in heaven. You can store them in this age or you can store them in the age to come. And Jesus is making this point because there's a lot at stake, and we'll get to that in just a second, but you know that there's a battle between these two things every day. And every day when you wake up, most of us are exposed to thousands of messages, and it turns out it depends on which apps you have on your phone and which generation you're in, but somewhere between 4,000 and 10,000 messages daily, each one of us receives, basically trying to get us to live in the present, appealing to our happiness and promising that if we'll satisfy our desires now in this age, that we'll be happier, that if we'll buy this or drive that or wear this certain type of thing or travel to this certain place, it'll make you happy now. These are the messages of this age and of this world and of earth. And it's all about, all of this is a mentality about living in the moment, which we've sort of glorified. And I'm not talking about being present with people, but it's like we've glorified this idea of you just got to live in the moment. You got to seize the day and you know, don't live for tomorrow. You have to live for the moment. But Jesus is saying just the opposite. He's saying that investing in later is greater, that investing in the age to come is even better, which he also appeals to our happiness, but he's promoting not just appealing to what we want now, but what we want most, our deepest desires. And it's not just in the moment. This is about what will make us happiest, what will meet our deepest desires in the long run. Not just in the moment, but in the long run. And so Jesus is making this argument, but here's the thing. This idea is swimming upstream in our culture, because there's very few messages that are saying this. In fact, there's a book that probably most of you haven't read. It's called The Road Less Traveled, and it talks all about things that people don't do that are actually better for them. And it's an author that wrote a book about, here is based on data and research, here's the things that made people the happiest. And in this book, The Road Less Traveled, M. Scott Peck, he said this. He said, delaying gratification. So this is the opposite of instant gratification. Delaying gratification is the process of scheduling. I love this. Scheduling the pain and pleasure of life in such a way as to enhance the pleasure by meeting and experience the pain first and getting it over with. This is something that's been proven by this sociologist who's saying, look, people that decide to schedule the pain now, to make sacrifices first now, what happens is they're actually happier later. And here's why this is important, because both now and later, the messages we receive about seizing the day and living in the moment versus what will make us happier in the long run, these competing messages are contending for the same thing, and it's not your money. This is what I want you to hear today. This message, we're going to talk about money. Jesus talked a lot about money, but the point wasn't your money. This was Jesus' point. This is what he said. He said, wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. See, many of us are driven by and dictated by our desires. But Jesus says that's not the way it works. It works just the opposite. It's where you place your treasure. Your treasure is what leads the way. Your heart's always on the move, and your heart's on the move because it's following your treasure. Now, it's not difficult to know where your heart is. Some of you know where your heart is. Some of you don't. Some of you, you know, you have a keen awareness of where your heart is, what your heart's set on, but it may not be what you intended your heart to be set on. But the truth is Jesus is making a point here that's not a popular one. It's not one in our culture that is glorified, but his point is if you want to know where your heart is, it's easy. It's really easy to figure it out. Your heart is where your treasure is. And if you follow your treasure, you follow the the trail of your treasure. You follow your bank account. You take a look at what's in your, where your checkbook is, which most of you who are millennials, you don't know what a checkbook is. You've never seen a checkbook. But if you follow your checkbook, you follow where your heart is going, because your heart, it follows your treasure. And again, you may or may not know where it is, but your heart is consistently on the move. And you know this because you desire different things in different seasons. And those desires you allow to drive you. And when you start investing your treasure in that place, or saving your treasure to go in a certain direction, or you start investing in or paying towards something, the truth is your heart gravitates in that same direction. And that's not new to most of us. But what comes next is brilliant. Jesus, and it's brilliant for somebody who likes to draw, because Jesus gives us two more pictures in addition to the treasure. He gives us two more pictures as to the primary factors for where our treasure goes. He starts with this. He says, your eye is like a lamp that provides light for your body. Now, this is important because light in the scriptures means life. It means goodness. It means health. Your eye is like a lamp that provides light for your body. And when your eye is healthy, your body is filled with light. So if you think about this, this is a metaphor for allowing good things to come into your life and into your heart through your eyes. Now, one thing to remember, last week we talked about this. Your eyes determine your attention, and your heart is, when the scripture talks about your heart, it's the control center. So it's your mind and your will and your emotions. And Jesus is making the point that if you want to pay attention to where your desires are and where your treasure is going, you have to pay attention to what's coming in through your eyes. And this is intuitive, but it's something that we don't always pay attention to. The truth is your eye and what you're looking at, what you're paying attention to, has a significant impact on where your treasure goes, where your money goes, the messages that you're paying attention to. They have a significant impact on what you do with your money. Now, I don't know what the things that you give your attention to the most every day, but I know that this is something I struggle with on a regular basis. It's keeping the things that are healthy for your eye connected to your heart. Now, we watch all sorts of things, and you're watching the newest Netflix show, and there are certain things that are really healthy for you, and there's things that create positive mental nutrition that are enriching to your life. And those things, the scripture says, when you allow those things into your body, they affect your heart, your mind, will, and your emotions as they come in through your eye. And again, it's somewhat intuitive. But when your eye is unhealthy, we all know this as well, when your eye is focused on things that are not good for you, your whole body is filled with darkness. Because your heart controls your body. It controls your mind and your will and your emotions. It's a control center for who you are. And when you allow things that are not good, that are unhealthy in your eyes, it creates chaos and difficulty and destruction. Your eyes can contaminate your mind. This is what we talked about a little bit yesterday. Causes us to store things that are in our mind, store things in our mind and in our heart that are not true and that are not healthy and that are not good. So Jesus says the eye has a significant impact on where our treasure goes. I'm a little, just to be transparent up here, I'm really disappointed in my eye for a moment. So I can't fix it at this point. So we just need to keep moving on. But the eye can, ironically, blindly lead us away from what's good and what's healthy. Then Jesus goes to a third word picture, which is interesting because we went from treasure to eyes to now he says, no one can serve two masters. So this is about something different. This is about something that's controlling you. No one can serve two masters, for you will hate one and love the other. You'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot, he says, serve God and be enslaved to money. Your translation might say, you can't serve both God and money. This might be the most intriguing of all the word pictures. The truth is when it comes to your heart has a throne. And whether you realize it or not, something is sitting on the throne of your heart. You may have chosen it, you may not have. But the truth is your heart has a throne. And you have to be careful. You have to pay attention to what's on the throne of your heart, because you may choose what's on the throne of your heart, but if you don't, it'll choose you. And Jesus's point is you can't serve more than one master. And there's really, it comes down to two things. You'll either choose to serve God. You'll either choose to place God on the throne of your heart, or you'll be enslaved to stuff. You'll be enslaved to money. Now look, hear my heart on this. This is why Jesus talked about money so much. It's because money or stuff, more than anything else, contends with God for the throne of your heart, for what takes control of your life, for the control center of your life. And the most common battle in this whole battle between for your heart is between now and later. And this world is trying to get you to invest in this world and pay attention to this world and live for now and not for later. And it uses two fear tactics. Because some of you are going, no, I save. I'm a saver. I'm not a spender. I'm not the person you're talking about. But it uses two fear factors. And the two fear factors are this: the fear of missing out, which is what causes us to live for now. And I've got to experience this. I got to get that. I won't be happy if I don't do this. And the fear of running out, which oftentimes what happens is we go, well, I'm not that person. I'm not the fear of missing out person. I don't spend hastily. I hold on to my money and I'm a good saver. But that's equally about now in terms of this age and the age to come. You see, as it turns out, there's two types of people, and both of them deal with trusting God with their resources. One says, I don't know that God can be trusted, and so I'm going to use all my resources. I'm going to use my wealth to try to get my happiness now. And the other one says, I'm afraid I'm going to run out, and then I won't be happy. I know I won't have, if the right opportunity comes along, I won't have what I need, and so I'm going to save it. Both keep us from investing in God's kingdom. Both cause us to serve now. And both reveal a lack of trust or devotion to God is our provider. Then Jesus wraps this whole section up, verse 33, and he says this. He says, seek the kingdom of God above all else. Think about this. He's connecting to the Proverbs. Above all else, guard your heart. One way to do that is to seek God's kingdom above all else. These two things go together. It's not a second thing to do. They're not competing with each other. One of the ways to guard your heart above all else is to seek God's kingdom above all else and to live righteously. And he will give you everything that you need. It's basically to say, okay, God, I'm going to invest in your kingdom first. And then I'm going to trust you to supply everything that I need. I'm going to invest in your kingdom first. I'm going to live the way you encourage me to live. And I'm going to allow you to be the king of my heart. I'm going to trust you to provide for me. I'm going to choose to build your kingdom over building my kingdom. Heart monitor number two is this. This is Jesus' words again. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. So where's your treasure? These three things are indicators. They're indicators of where our treasure is going. And the first one, as it relates to our treasure, this is as it relates to our passion, our eye, as it relates to our attention. And the throne of our heart is about our devotion. Now think about this for a second. Our passion is about what we treasure. It's where our heart is. And the reason is, when we think about passion, we just think about things that we love. We think about things that make us excited. But Jesus is saying your treasure reveals what's in your heart, and what you're truly passionate about is because passion has to do with sacrifice. And if you want to know what somebody's most passionate about, you have to look at what they're willing to sacrifice the most for. That's what passion's determined by. It's not by emotion or excitement. See, passion, this is why they call it Passion Week. This is why they call it the Passion of the Christ, the movie, is because Jesus's passion was all about what he was willing to endure, what he was willing to sacrifice to gain you and to gain me. It was what he was willing to sacrifice, and he was willing to sacrifice his life for the church, for his bride. And Jesus leading the way, he says, look, this is the deal. What you're willing to sacrifice indicates what you really treasure. And he's shifting our value system. He's like, look, you don't want to live for now. I'm trying to rescue you for living for this life, for this age. It's not what you were meant for. There's an age that's coming, and I want you to trust me. I want you to trust me that investing in eternal things rather than temporal things, investing in things that are permanent, not things that are going to pass by, that's better for you. It leads to a healthier heart. So how do you monitor your passion? You look at your bank account. That's what Jesus is saying. You look at your credit card statement. That's how you know what you're passionate about. That's how you know if you're passionate about eternal things or not. Let me ask you, if you were to ask your accountant, if you were to ask somebody who was looking at your finances, if somebody else was looking at your bank account, somebody else was looking at your credit card statement, how passionate are you about eternal things? I'm not telling you what those are, but when you think about the things that Jesus valued, that he said, this is how you invest in the things to come. This is how you invest in the age to come. These are the things that are going to last forever. This is what matters. How passionate are you about eternal things? And your passion, it often is dictated by this second picture. Your passion, if your passion is about sacrifice, your attention is about your focus. What are you focused on? What do you pay attention to? What has your eye? See, what happens for most of us, because of all the messages we receive about about this life and what will make us happy now, what happens is constant comparison creeps into our lives. What I have versus what somebody else has. What I get to do versus what somebody else gets to do. And look, I'm not pointing a finger. This is me too. I do it all the time. But that constant comparison is a result of what our attention is fixed on. And it's fixated on now, which leads to discontentment and the striving for more. It dips into our appetites. It allows us to be driven by the desires on the inside of us. Now, I know some of you are ahead of me, and you're arguing with me in your mind. We've talked about this before, and you're winning. It's okay. You can win in your mind. Discontentment, you're thinking, discontentment drives progress and prosperity. This whole message is un-American, you're thinking. Like, without discontentment, we don't have progress and prosperity. I mean, it is the heart of capitalism. And here's what I would tell you, you're exactly right. Congratulations, you won that argument. But as C.S. Lewis points out brilliantly, prosperity knits a man to this world. He feels that he is finding his place in it, while really it's finding its place in him. Prosperity, the desire and the appetite being driven towards the things that make us rich in this world, knit us to this world. And God's saying, I will provide for all your needs. I want you to be content. I will provide everything you need for life and godliness. And you have an inheritance coming to you, a richness that's coming to you. I want you to understand the secret of becoming content. And it's living for later. Not later in this life, not for the retirement age, but living for eternity. See, comparison and contentment, they rarely coexist. They almost never go together. Comparison is about now, and contentment is about later. It's about trusting for later. So you got to ask yourself, what primarily has your attention? What are you focused on? What do you think about? What do you dream about? What do you have your, this is a phrase from our culture, what do you have your eye on that's drawing your heart? Because you have your eye on it, and eventually if you keep your eye on it too long, what's going to happen is your treasure is going to follow what you have your eye on. Where your treasure is where your heart will eventually be. These first two are revealing of this final indicator. And the final indicator is our devotion. And if passion's about sacrifice and attention's about focus, devotion is about who we're serving. It's about who or what we're giving our life to. And the truth is these first two reveal what's on the throne of our heart. And the most religious people in Jesus' day, surprisingly, maybe surprising, maybe not, the Sadducees and the Pharisees, they're the ones who knew the law the best. They taught it. They monitored everybody. They kept everybody in line. They were devoted to their own power, prestige, and wealth. And Jesus would confront them on this over and over and over because they weren't building God's kingdom. They were building their own kingdom. And the truth is there's something sitting on the throne of your heart and it's building a kingdom. And you have to choose who or what you're going to serve in this life, who or what you're going to give your life, you're going to give your heart to, or it will choose you. But make no mistake, something will sit on the throne of your heart. Something or someone will master you intentionally or haphazardly. It may be a certain lifestyle. It may be a certain level of power or status. It might be trying to attain some measure of comfort in this life or the appetite to experience more, because there's a sense in which, and none of us would say this out loud, there's a sense in which, what if there isn't really a heaven? What if God doesn't come through on what he's promised? I want to get everything I can out of this life now. And Jesus is saying, it's not good for you now. It's not good for your heart. And I want you to trust me. And if you'll prioritize later and you'll invest in eternal things, your reward later will be greater. He taught this throughout the New Testament. Years ago, I have a friend who over the years has been a mentor to me. And he and his wife were one of the families that first started our church way back in 1995. But before that, prior to that, he was telling me a story about a defining faith moment in his life. And it's when his kids were young. His kids are grown. He has grandkids now. He's traveling around a lot, seeing his grandkids. In fact, he's still part of our church. He's out of town right now. But he gave me permission to share this story. And I'll never forget this story he told me. He said that he was challenged at church one time. This is before we started our network of churches. He was at a church, and he was challenged related to giving. And The pastor of the church was challenging people to invest in God's kingdom and invest in later and not now. And so he and his wife, the pastor said, "Hey, just decide on a number. You don't have to pick the percentage I did. Don't compare to other people. You just need to decide on what you should give." And so he and his wife decided they were going to pray about it, because that's what the pastor challenged to do. So they began praying about it. And one Sunday after church, they had decided, when they got in the car, that they had both been praying about this, and they decided that it was time. It was time to land on, what are we going to actually give? And so they're driving home in the car. They both decided they were going to write down what they had decided, what they felt like God was leading them to give. And so they're going to write it down. They're going to pass it to the kids in the back seat, and the kids were going to tell them what their numbers were. They're going to read out loud what the numbers were. So they both write it down. He and his wife, they pass it to the kids in the back seat, and the numbers were identical. And the whole family was like dumbfounded. They were all excited. They were thrilled about it. And they were like, this is definitely what we need to do. And he said, "I remember thinking, oh no, I think we have to do this now." And it was that moment where the rubber met the road. And so he sat down and he was like, I started to try to figure out, because he said, we didn't make the decision based on what we thought we could do. It was, what does God want us to do? And he said, I realized that we were going to need to sell one of our cars. And so they made a plan to do that, and they figured out they were going to be fine with one car, and they decided to sell one of their cars. And in the process of that, his wife got sick. In fact, she got so sick she had to have an emergency surgery, and there was no really time to sell the car, and they had already made a decision about when they were going to start giving the money. And so he remembers seeing that date, and with everything going on, he looked at his bank account, and amazingly, he had enough money in his account to begin giving that money. And the time came to give and for them to start their giving. And so his wife wasn't well enough yet to go to church. So he grabbed one of his sons and he went to church. And he didn't tell anybody, but he wrote the first check and he put it in his pocket. And he went to church, and they're sitting in church, and the offering plates were about to be passed. And they're getting closer and closer, and he's just sitting there. He's not reaching into his pocket. And as the offering plate gets to their row, he told me, he said, "My son," he leaned over to me, and he said, Dad, aren't you going to give that money?" Remember that money we decided? Aren't you going to give that money that we felt like God wanted us to give? He said, Joel, I knew instantly in that moment that my decision would tell my son if I trusted God or not. He said, so trembling, I reached my hand into my pocket and I pulled the money out and I put it in the plate. He said, there were a few tight months, but God provided for us and we grew through that season. We all grew as a family. We saw how God met our needs. He then went on to bless us financially. And he said, one of the things I'm most proud of is all my kids are grown and they're unbelievably generous. He told me, I'm so grateful for how God used my son in my life that day. I don't know a more passionate person about building God's kingdom, a more passionate person about the church, a more passionate couple for investing in their neighbors, for investing in the next generation than this guy and his wife. I don't know one. They're still incredibly involved after almost 30 years in our churches and more passionate than ever. Why? It's because of their treasure. It's where they place their treasure over and over and over. And it's got a hold of their heart. God has a hold of their heart because they've placed him on the throne. They've been obedient to do what he's asked them to do. See, don't be mistaken. This isn't about money. This is a heart issue. This is about who he was trusting. You think he misses any of that money? You think when he sees a baptism, when he hears about things that are happening amongst the next gen around here, when he hears about the number of new people coming to faith, finding hope, marriages being restored, do you think he misses any of that money? Not a penny. So, before you leave, here's the question. Here's the questions. The question is, where's your treasure? Are you paying attention to where your treasure is heading? Because your heart's on the move and it's following your treasure wherever it's going. What is your focus? Because your focus, where your eyes are, eventually will lead to where your treasure ends up. And both of these things, they'll indicate who you're serving. See, all of these are issues of the heart. God doesn't need your money. He wants your heart. He wants you to trust him. But the thing that contends with God for the throne of your heart, the thing that contends with God for the passion of your heart, for your attention and your devotion, it's your stuff. It's your money. As your pastor, you should pay attention to where your treasure is going. Because where your treasure is, that's where your heart's following. Let me pray for you. God, I pray for somebody today who has the potential to misinterpret or misconstrue something that's been said, but you're stirring in them and they're feeling that same tension that my friend sat as he sat in church that day, and they're struggling. And they're struggling with my motives and their situation and their finances and their obligations and what's responsible and all of those things. And I think those are all important things to wrestle with. But I pray that you would cut through that with clarity today. And you'd speak clearly to them. They would know exactly what you want them to do with what they've heard today. And then I pray that you would give them, grant them the faith, grant them the courage to trust you, knowing that you want what's best for their heart. You want what's best for their life. You want them to not only find satisfied desires in the here and now, you don't want them to just find what they want now. You want their deepest desires, the things they want most, to be granted to them. So I pray we'd know what to do with what we've heard, and we choose to trust you in it. I pray it in Jesus' name.